This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Here we go with another edition of the PatCast. This one coming to you from UBC as the Canucks get set for practice. Jeff Patterson, TSN's Canuck reporter, and Jason Botcher to the Province. And of course, he is the man behind the Provies. And before we get going here, well, first things first, I've got to tell you, as always, the podcast is a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. They are proud sponsors of the Coquitlam Express and the BC Hockey League. They're your number one overall pick for selection and inventory. If you're in the market for a vehicle, even if you're just starting to think about purchasing a new vehicle, by all means, we recommend checking out Eagle Ridge GM. You'll find them two blocks west of Coquitlam Center, 2595 Barnett Highway, or visit them at eagleridgegm.com. Hockey season is underway, so no shortage of material, Botch. And I have to tell you, and sad but true, I measure my self-worth by the mentions I get in the Provies. So I am having one hell of a good week. Like, we're only two games into the season, but, and I know you can't get enough of the head on a stick.
Flat J-Pat. Yeah. There's a picture that, that I think someone from the Senators media sent out from the Alex Burrows scrum and conceptually, they took the photo to say, hey, look at all the media. Of course, in the middle of the way that there's this miraculous photo. I honestly, you have to see it. And if you haven't seen it, check my Twitter feed. I asked people to caption it last night. But your head, it's like your head is floating in the middle of the scrum. The entire picture looks arranged around you, J-Pat. And there's this glorious light shining right there on your face. And there's multiple optical illusions here. One, it looks like you're being scrubbed. Like, I honestly can't focus on anything else. I wake up in the morning, I'm thinking about this picture. All last night, I'm trying to pound out the Provies. I'm thinking about this picture. I'm trying to watch the game, figure what the fuck is happening with the Canucks power play and different things that are going on. What's Thomas Vanek doing? And every time I get two or three thoughts in, I again think about this picture. So again, your head, A, it looks like it's floating. B, it looks like one of those cardboard cutouts. I've kind of called it the flat J-Pat. And it looks like you're being scrummed. It looks like the light of God is shining on you. And of course, yeah, there's 80 games left. I want that picture in all 80 Provies from here on in, to tell you the truth.
Well, I have to admit, I saw the picture originally, and then people zeroed in on my face. It, and you're right. It looks like there is a lot to digest in that photo. And part of me, it looks like Kuz came into the scrum holding like a cardboard, like a giant, you know, those giant lollipops. Like, that's kind of what it looked like. And so, you know, for most of the day and through the game, that's what I focused on. But then, like, I had this absolutely startling revelation when I read the Provies, because I hadn't come at it from the fact that it looked like I was getting scrummed, but it is, like, it's mind bending. And, like, you know, there are those things out there, you know, those pictures. Do you see the old lady or do you see the young lady? And like your eye, you know, yeah, it takes, there's the frog and the horse, I think. And it depends which way you're looking. Like, so last night I spent a good deal of time after the game when the Provies came. I was like, holy crap. Like I hadn't seen this before. Like, the picture was brand new to me. And again, two games into the season, I have a funny feeling this isn't going to be the last we see of this. So let me tell you about my morning so far. Okay. Because I was asked a while ago to go get to do a photo shoot, like for promotional purposes, headshots and stuff. So I did the game last night, go home, got up 9 o'clock, had this photo shoot downtown, professional photography studio, you know, and the guys, you know, do this, do that, smile more. And like, look, you know me, like, I don't do that. I don't. No. And then I'm thinking to myself, the whole time, I'm thinking to myself, like, what the hell am I doing here when the flat J-pad, like for promotional purposes, that's all the radio station would need.
Yeah, they should take the flat J-pad. The flat J-pad, in fact, they should take the flat J-pad, put it on a stick, and have that as the marketing campaign for the entire thing. And I have put a lot, like I do think about this photo a lot. And I also started wondering, like, when did you start becoming called J-Pat? Like, was that – because I even hear on 1040 now, they bill you as, like, coming up, it's J-Pat. And, like, I heard the marketing, a commercial where it was, like, J-Pat on the post-game show. Like, it is now ubiquitous. And I'm just – like, I thought – for some reason, I thought it was maybe the Photoshop guys, and then it became a Provies thing. But it is everywhere now, and I don't remember back in the day, like when I first started getting to know you, anyone calling you J-Pat. Do you know when that whole all started?
Well, I think we crossed that threshold officially when I got the Instagram account.
Okay,
then, which then is J-Pat 1040, right. And at that very moment, like that marked a new passage in time that Jeff Patterson, as you knew him, no longer really existed. Now it's, I heard the same thing. I was like, really? Like, they're promoting my appearances on the book. J-Pat? All right, whatever. I can roll with that. And I'm delighted that you and I are able to do this, because yesterday I was a little worried that maybe our professional relationship, our friendship was coming to an end, because you looked like you were holding quite a grudge that I got to the bottom of the Stetcher boxing lessons in the summer story after we saw him drop the gloves on opening night. Like, you wouldn't let it go yesterday.
Yeah, I was. I do admit, like, there's certain things you do and other people in the media, and I do get admittedly jealous at times. I want all the story. I want all the good stories. I want them all to myself. And when I saw that post game, you know, Troy Stetcher gets in that fight. And, you know, we talked to him a bit about it. I felt kind of disappointed in my interview with him. I wasn't able, like, Bulis was there and Bruff was there. It just felt like a crowded room that night, and I felt like I couldn't get in. So I knew I was missing. I just felt like I was missing something. And sure enough, the next day I look, and turns out I was missing something, that you've scooped me, and you have this great story about how Troy Stetcher was training to fight in some kind of fight club and learning how to box over the course of the summer, something that his trainer and stuff. Actually, it was really good, and it was interesting, and it would have made and I just read it going, oh, damn, like that would have made such a good Provi segment if I could have extracted that out of Stetcher that night. But yeah, I'm jealous. Like, now you're going to be writing. How often are you going to be writing? I don't need more competition. I've got enough. I've got The Athletic, and Bulis is around all the time. Like, I honestly, like, I like that there's a lot more media, but now I'm starting to feel like there's too much competition and people are mowing my lawn. And that was my feeling there. Like, you cut my grass, and credit to you, because it was. I mean, I don't know how it came up. Like, did Stetcher just give you that? Like, I want to be the Stetcher guy. Like, I want to be the Stetcher guy, God damn it. I want everything. Like, this is how I felt inside. I would waves of rage would overcome me as I would think, God damn it, I can't believe J-Pat got that.
See, now I'm scared shitless that you're going to go consult Stetcher, find out about his trainer. You're going to go, like, hardcore 2 weeks of just intense boxing training, and you're going to come back here and punch me in the face because I got this story. I just asked him the question, like, how did you think you fared in the fight? And then he offered up, well, you know, I took some boxing lessons in the summer, and look, because I was kind of kicking myself too when I left the rink that night. I'm thinking, I didn't follow up on that. Like, littlest guy in the league taking boxing lessons. Like, you know, did it come from the Matt Martin thing last year where he got mugged and Miller had to jump in? And, you know, and I didn't follow up with any of that. So I just kind of made a mental note. Sunday was a day off. Monday was the holiday. You were feasting on turkey and gravy, and you weren't anywhere to be seen. It was one of those quiet days at the rink where there were only a handful, the guys that you just mentioned, nowhere to be seen. There were about three or four of us. And so I just went back in and said, hey, we got to kind of follow up on that. And it turns out that there was more of a story. And it wasn't just so much the boxing lessons, but I thought it was interesting too, if people read to the bottom of the story, you know, he felt that people were taking liberties with him last year, and it's understandable at his size, but I also think that's what makes him a pretty cool story, that, you know, like, he knows. He's always been told he's too small, and he just continues to battle through, and he didn't like being taken advantage of last year, so he's done some things here. He's not going to fight every night. I don't expect him, you know, this to become something we see from Troy Stetcher, but He addressed an area that he thought was a weakness and, you know, tried to turn it into some sort of strength for him.
Yeah. And he had a really interesting training program over the course of the summer, and that was part of it. He did want to get stronger. And what he did was, he spent like a series of weeks, where he didn't do any cardio. He bulked up from 186 to 196. So he put on 10 pounds without doing any cardio. And then gradually he tried to get back to get his speed back because he felt he had lost a bit of speed getting up to 196. He lost he started doing cardio, lost a couple of pounds at a time, said, 196 to 194. How do I feel? I can lose more. And then did it gradually. So he went 186, 196, then to 190. Putting on the muscle, putting on the strength, and then ultimately without losing any of the speed. And good for him. I think that the results so far for him in the first couple of games have been mixed, and certainly Travis has played him that way. I think that once again he played no defenseman in either of the two games have played fewer minutes than Stetcher.
All right, so I got that story. One for me. All right. It's a long season. You got one of the 100 chapters in this book that has hit the shelves and is taking the city of Vancouver by storm ahead of the Christmas season, and you know it's going to be a stocking stuffer. And it brings us back to one of our favorite characters here on the podcast, Drancer. It was his project before he went corporate, and he's landed himself a great job, and we're thrilled with all of that, but he had to leave this chapter of his life behind, and that was the guy that was writing about the Canucks and following the Canucks, and he had the side project of this book that then fell into the lap of Halford without Brough. And right, there's probably a story there, talking about boxing, and but that's for another day. Maybe we'll get to the bottom of that sometime. But you got chapter 82. In the book.
Yeah, and certainly there's more to come about this in the future, and I'll definitely be writing. I've already got a few ideas of things I'm going to write about this book, but one of the things I got with the book, I got the copy to review. I got a letter from the publisher saying if you want to interview either the authors, contact us, and I was super excited because no one has done the Drancer interview since he's gone, right? And there's all kinds of great questions about him, none bigger than probably how he feels about what happened to his Twitter account. Like, this used to be one of the must-follow guys in the entire NHL, and here it is that he's got this really corporate PR Twitter account. And of course, I want to know lots about the book. And I know that, for example, Tony Gallagher's in it a ton, right? And I have this take where Gallagher, no one dominated the media like Gallagher dominated the media for about a 20-year period from 1977 to 1997. And to tip my hand a little bit, at some point, I'm going to start making there's all these other media guys in the BC Sports Hall of Fame. He's not in it. He's been overlooked. And I think that's a horrible, it's untenable. Like, I can't believe that Tony Gallagher, a guy that just crushed the Vancouver media for so long, isn't in the BC Sports Hall of Fame. And that's one of the reasons that I want to interview Drance about this book, because, Gallagher's cited all over the place. And I know that Tom and Mike, and I'm sure they put a ton of time into the 100 things every Canucks fan should do and know before they die. But as I got excited to interview Drancer, I messaged him. I slipped into his DMs and I said, dude, I'm going to be interviewing you over this book. I'm in it. The Provies are in it. I'm super excited. He shut me down. There will be no Drancer interviews. And the publisher will be told that Drance will be doing nothing when it comes to this book. So I will not, once again, I will be shut out of getting the Drancer interview.
Wow. The mystery, the mystique around Drancer grows. Now, is he not doing it because he's too busy letting us know where the Florida Panther mascot is going to be appearing? Because I'm so with you. Like, this is a guy that had it. Like, you couldn't wait to see what he was going to tweet next. And then you're like, holy shit. Like, why? I didn't even see that. Like, there was so much of that. And now I hate it. Like, I hate the fact that he, and again, it's his job and I get that part of it, but I don't need to know where the cat is appearing. But that's kind of what it's become.
And the thing with him, he had the kind of personality that would feast on the current Vancouver sports media market, because there's so many different voices right now and there's hot takes coming from everywhere. And he'd always come at things with this very calm, collective, counterculture like approach. Like he'd look at a different subject, like, good Branson is better than you think. And he'd have all of this evidence of why Eric and Branson is a lot better than anyone thinks. And I think he would just have a field day right now, you know, pulling pieces from all these different outlets and media people. Like the press box is jammed, was jammed last night. You got 650, 1040. Like there's stuff and multiple writers now. And, it is just the kind of situation where Drancer would thrive. So although I'm not allowed to interview him, I do think, and if I could, I would ask him, like, is it killing you just a little bit that you're not here during this media gold rush when you would just be sitting back picking guys and takes off all day, every day, doing your Drancer thing? So I do think that there's a part of him, although he lives in Florida, I'm sure he's got a great life down there. I would love to live down there, you know, doing his thing, sunny all the time, you know, kick back. I'm sure it's difficult working with Dale Talon, but is there a piece of him that misses all of the action that's going on right now in Vancouver? Because there is a lot.
Yeah, two games into the season already, a bunch of storylines, and it is sort of so Vancouver that the biggest storyline is a guy that hasn't played yet. And Saturday was something else. You were there, I was there. Innocent question about why Brock Besser hadn't been practicing on the power play. Boom. Mic drop, and the city lost its shit.
I honestly, and I've mentioned this before, I was overwhelmed by the reaction. I thought people were at least prepared to the idea that Brock Besser may not make the team, let alone not play in the first game of the season. But it was an avalanche of shit, like just everywhere. And it was everyone. It was people that normally are super positive about the team, people that slurp management, people that are into everything that Canucks do. They were frustrated. Of course, the people from the negative aspects, they were frustrated. And I think, like, Travis knew it was a big moment. You could tell he knew it was a big moment. I thought, like, since then, he's handled it extremely well up to this point. He's done a really good job of defending his position, explaining why Besser wasn't in the lineup. He's listed, it seems like there's another reason almost every day. Like, another, like, first it was the matchups and the situation between the two lines and how they're going to shut down McDavid. Then it morphed, and it's morphed into, you know, he needed to work on his skating. He needed to watch video. He comes from college and they only played 40 games. Like, the list has gone on and on and on. Now, I think Travis has done a terrific job at kind of diffusing the market and the overwhelming response, because the city has really gone bananas in a way that I haven't seen since, like, the Corey Schneider Luongo days. But if he's not playing, like, if we find out later on, like, I assume he's playing. And by the time you hear this, we'll know one way or the another. I assume he's playing. But if he's not, like, then it becomes, then I will say, like, some of that angst, some of that excitement, some of that over-the-top reaction will be warranted. It wasn't really warranted for one game. It would be if he sits the first three.
I have to say, though, and again, it goes back to Monday, when followed up with Travis Green, if, you know, and I was curious, this is a new head coach, first time in the NHL, you know, hasn't really spent a lot of time in Vancouver, certainly when games have been played and issues have arisen. And so my follow-up on Monday was, like, did you know? Like, did he have an inkling that this was going to be as unpopular as it was, that there would be rage in some corners from the fan base? And I thought his answer was terrific. Like, I thought Monday was a masterclass in sort of how to handle, you know, yes, he did know, but then he walked us all through why he had made the decision he did.
Yeah, I thought that was his best day. I thought he was eloquent. He was articulate. You may not agree with him, but you understood him. That's, you know, that's kind of how I felt walking away from that. Like, I was fine with Besser sitting out the first game, if you want to sit him out then. But it can't, like, we all know it can't continue forever. Like, the guy has got to play. But Green did a really good, like, I've been super impressed with how he's handled us, how he's handled the media, how he's been open to have that discourse, that back and forth. And no better example than the Besser thing. And then, of course, which I thought was the scene stealer last night, post game, him and Kuz going back and forth. And I was riveted. I didn't quite understand. Like, 'cause there's a lot on my plate after a game. Like, I got to get up, and in about an hour, hour and a half, I've got to put videos and write through that, you know, all these words, and I've got a lot on my plate. I can't always compute everything that's happening. But I knew I was riveted watching Kuz and Travis go back and forth. It wasn't until the way home I figured out why. It was because it wasn't an argument. He didn't shut him down after two questions. I would have stopped after two questions about Vanek. Like, I kept thinking, okay, he's not going to ask another one, is he? And Kuz kept asking another one. We're done here. He kept pushing him. And to his credit, Green kept coming back. And he wasn't agitated. He wasn't angry. It was a conversation, J-Pat. It was a conversation between a coach and a reporter and a journalist. And I thought a good one. I thought a revealing one. I thought that Green, you know, when he talked about, I was actually upset that he didn't check the guy right before he slashed him. I was more upset with that. That was super revealing. And there's not many coaches that would give something like that to the media. There's also not many coaches that would give that much leeway to a reporter to keep asking, basically, like, the nut of it. And Kuz did a great job with his questions. But the nut of it is, your player sucked. Like, how do you react? Like, what are you going to do about this guy? He scored a goal, yeah, but he did suck. So, I don't know. That was my takeaway, that Green was great, handled it well, and you could see he was open to the dialogue between us and him, which the previous coaches have not been.
One of the beauties of the podcast, and we try to do this, is bring people, you know, into our world and what we do on a daily basis. And I thought pretty fascinating, after Travis Green had dropped the bomb that Besser wasn't playing on Saturday, Besser was among the players that was on the ice doing, you know, the optional skate. He showed up at the rink, apparently didn't know or thought he was playing. Somewhere in that timeline, he found out that he wasn't going to be in the opening night lineup. So we go into the room. We talk to a few players. Jake is there holding court. He's excited because he is playing. And then Besser is one of the last guys off the ice, comes into his stall. We sort of move in delicately doing this dance because it's a tough situation, obviously, to ask a young guy. And yeah, I'd already clobbered him over the head with the no-shot attempts the week before. And just as we were about to swoop in, we got shut down.
No, I had a lot of angst of going into the room. Again, like, I felt some empathy for him when you asked the question the other night, you know, his last preseason game. You didn't even get a shot attempt. And it seems now that that's part of the reason, actually, that's come out. That's part of the reason he hasn't played in the first two games. So he's not playing in game one. And we're in the room, and I'm like, okay, I really don't want to break his spirit. Like, I don't want to be the guy to ask him about not playing. So he comes in. I'm waiting. Is anyone going to approach him? No one does. So I keep looking up. I kind of gave you a look. I didn't say anything, but I gave you a look like, okay, and I don't know if you read this from my face, but my face was saying this. I don't want to go over and ask this guy about not playing, but that's my job, and I'm going to have to do it. And I'm doing it now, J-Pat, and if you want in on this, come on over. I don't know if you saw that in my eyes, but that's what I was telling you. And so as I was walking toward him, slowly, hoping that someone else would dive in first, I saw you shuffling forth, and I said, like, and the Canucks PR was right there, and I said to him, look, can I talk to you? I got to talk to you about not playing. And he looked at me and he goes, sorry, I can't. And it turned out that Canucks PR had given him the get out of jail free card, saying that because some technicality where because he wasn't playing that night, he didn't have to do any media, which actually I was totally cool with. I was going in and ask him because that was my job. And if he didn't want to talk that particular day and if Canucks PR was going to protect him from talking that particular day, I was okay with it.
So I'm thinking to myself,
well, I did look like the villain.
Yeah, once in a while, you got to play that role. But here's a suggestion for you now. In those delicate moments moving forward, you, from your back pocket, should produce a flat J-Pat on a stick and just kind of wave it. Brock, can I ask you a question, Brock? I got a question. You know, wave the sort of like a puppet show and, you know, just loosen them up a little, maybe get a laugh out of them. Because we're not getting a lot of laughs out of Brock Besser right now. He's a pretty serious dude.
No, you're right. He's always got the same kind of tone. I've mentioned this before. Like, it doesn't matter what has happened. He's got that same deadpan, quiet, monotone approach. It's going to, like, I think we've done a lot of work in lightening up Jake. And Jake's been really good this year. He's been really funny and lively. the work we're going to have to put in to get Brock Besser anywhere near there, I mean, it's going to be a lot of spade work that we're going to have to put in to try to get him to lighten up a bit.
I have to say, I was proud of this city on Saturday afternoon when these photos emerged of Jake and Brock Besser allegedly at the new casino in town the night before the season opener. And again, people have probably seen them. They're out there. You know, and there was nothing untoward in the photo. There were no booze. Like, just a couple young guys. They're sitting at a table. So it was a casino. I haven't been in the new casino. I can't tell you if it was that one in particular. Like, I didn't see anything wrong with it. You know, people are saying, oh, 11 o'clock the night before a game. And, yeah, I understand the optics, I suppose. At the same time, like, these are young guys. They got to have a life. And there was no way to prove that those photos were taken the night before. They could have been taken two nights before. Who knew? Anyways, I think in other situations, that kind of stuff would explode. This one disappeared before it even became a story.
Well, yeah, and I got a lot of text messages, and people are sending me the photo. You got to include this in the Provies. And my initial reaction was just that. Like, so what that they're out? Like, Besser probably lives in that hotel. I haven't asked him. He probably lives right there in the hotel. Like, I'm up every day at 6:30 a.m. I can't get to bed before 11 o'clock. I can't even imagine what it's like for someone that's 20, 21 years old. It must be very difficult to fall asleep at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. Like, so I didn't see anything wrong with the pictures, even if, you know, they were taken the night before a game. So what? And the real problem with them, as you point out, there was no date stamp. There was no time stamp. Who knows when they were from? I saw someone on Instagram suggesting it was 10:30. Okay, a couple of players are out somewhere at 10:30. So what? They could still be in bed by 11, 11:30. Great. I don't put an equivalence to a casino, to like some kind of nightclub. Like, if they want to go and put a little bit of money on a blackjack hand, who gives a shit? I don't care. And you're right, the city did react well. Over, like, it didn't go viral. Fans out there said the same thing. I think that they had the same conclusion that we had, most of the right-thinking fans anyway, which is, who cares?
You can probably tell the Canucks have taken the ice here at practice at UBC, and hopefully it doesn't distract too much from the PatCast. Imagine these guys trying to overshadow the PatCast. Seriously. PatCast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM, and this month, get a cash credit up to 20% off the MSRP on most vehicles, including the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. You'll find them online. EagleRidgeGM.com is the website, and check them out if you are in the market for a new vehicle. You wrote about it yesterday. I tweeted it earlier in the day because it really has become a story here through camp, the preseason. And I guess at some point I thought it was going to go away, but it seems to be picking up steam. And yesterday, Goodbranson was the latest. Knowingly or unknowingly, like, these guys, it's just open season on Willie DeJardin and the systems he employed and deployed for the Vancouver Canucks. And guys are just teeing off on him.
Yeah, and I mentioned this last night when I was writing the Provies, that I think part of it is natural. Like they need something to believe in, something to kind of rally around. And, of course, they're going to rally around a new coach. The team is generally the same as it was a year ago. So how are you going to say that the Canucks, if you're a player on the team, how are you going to say, we're better? Okay, why are you better? Well, part of it is the systems. Okay, why are the systems better? And it's hard to say the systems are better without ripping the coach from last year. But I will say, I think that, you know, players have not gone out of their way to also make the point that, well, Willie's approach was needed last year. No, apparently it was not. I think that, I think the truth is kind of coming out. All of these answers that we've seen have been unsolicited. Like, no one's actually, I haven't heard anyone go up to anyone, a player, and say, hey, how does this compare to Willie's year last year? But specifically, they have said, and they continue to say, that last year's team and last year's systems with Willie, in fact, the past 2 years, with those systems, it was almost impossible for them to score. And it's like the shackles have been off here with Travis Green, who has given them less things to think about. has given them the opportunity to be more aggressive, to use their skating more, to push the puck more. And you're right. Like, I honestly think, like, every day, almost, if you were to ask about this topic, every day you could have pulled so-called shade out of a player when it comes to Willie. Like, Willie has taken some hits here. And I remember a year ago, okay, it wasn't just Willie, right? It was Jim. It was Trevor. It was certain people in the media who all said, this is the only way the team can play. Well, no, the team got, what, like 30 wins, 29 wins? Like, there are a lot of ways to play to get 30 wins or 29 wins. And Travis has brought a new approach and a new way to play. And I think that shows that last year's thinking was wrong. So I do hope, if you were someone in the media who said last year was the only way that they can play, that you now apologize, that you now say you're wrong, and you now accept that Travis Green has you know, opened your eyes to a new way that this team can play and new systems that can play. But I thought the Gudbranson quote, I don't know how it came up, because it was you and I think the Ottawa media, but I thought that that was one of the bigger knocks. I mean, this is Eric freaking Gudbranson talking about how he is thrilled that defensemen are now activated and this team can go and push tempo. Like, Eric Gudbranson is supposed to be the stay-at-home Willie guy. You know what I mean? Like, even him is sitting there calling the coach out.
Well, and this is one of my favorite things within the media, and I'm sure you've seen it as well. It was an Ottawa scrum, and I just sauntered over. It was the Ottawa media guys yesterday, because he's an Ontario guy. But you see this quite often, you know, same local media day after day, questions are, sometimes you get a different group of media, different questions, different responses. And so I just thought, all right, like, you know, let's just kind of go see what Gudbranson has to say. And sure enough, you know, it was questions from an outsider just asking about, oh, the start of the season, differences with Travis Green. And that's when it produced that answer about, you know, systems that are, you know, designed for this personnel. They're just so much more effective and so much better. Two games in, are they better? Like, you know,
I think that you got to give it some time. I know everyone's going to say, well, Travis Green has simplified things, so it should be really easy. There's going to be a learning curve here, and this is, you can't just turn everything on the dime. I remember at the beginning of last year, like, they won the first four games. They didn't get a lead in any. They're heavily outplayed in all those games, and everyone was saying, well, the team's still learning the new well, they're a year into it, but they're still learning the new defensive system. Okay, I think that you got to give it some time for like, I agree, in the first two games, the results haven't been fantastic. The team's generally been outplayed, although they did have a great game, really good, solid game against the Oilers. So I think that there's a learning curve. You got to give it some time before you start comparing how this team looks to how last team plays. But certainly guys like Gudbranson seem to believe that Green's style, Green's system, fits the personnel more than Willie's, which there's no other way to take that than it's a slam on Willie Desjardins, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how I took it, and he's not alone. And you're right, I think the most remarkable part in all of that is it's not pointed questions, where is Travis better than Willie? It's just in conversation, guys are taking it and going right there. Like, you know, they're running with it, and that's the answer that they're offering up. So, interesting. Like, I'm with you. I thought Saturday was just a fun night of hockey. Maybe it was just, you know, the excitement of opening night and the fact that we hadn't seen hockey, regular season hockey, games that meant something in a while. But, you know, you're giving up 42 shots to an Ottawa team that doesn't have Erik Karlsson. There are some warning signs there for me when you look at the way that they played. And, yeah, on Saturday night they had four lines going, and you know, the Dorsett line and Derek Dorsett himself, like, that was a good story for the Vancouver Canucks. You know, last night he takes a double minor, you know, wasn't prominent, I didn't think, in any way. And so, you know, I do wonder. I mean, at some point, water finds its level, and, you know, Dorsett hadn't played since last November, kind of played like he had been shot out of a cannon on opening night, making up for lost time. But I do worry, you know, if Derek Dorsett becomes the focal point of the 2017-2018 Vancouver Canucks, then I think it's a hockey club that does have some issues.
Yeah, and there is a new world, or like I call it the you know, Travis Green's new world order, and I think we're in it and still trying to figure out what it all means. It means that things are going to be significantly different. He definitely likes matchups and matching lines up way more than Willie ever did. Like, that was a part of the game that Willie just wasn't interested in. Like, he had no time for like, he, Willie was at his happiest when he could just roll four lines, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. Like, that was Willie.
Hang on a second. Willie was at his happiest when he was protecting the one goal deficit. Come on. You know that, and I know that.
when he, like that, but like, there's no bigger, like, when I think of Willie, I, at his peak Willie, yeah, it's either protecting the one goal deficit, losing by one with Chaput and Megna on the ice, or it's the first year, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Travis ain't going to play that. He's not going to go that. He's going to design game plans for teams. Like, he's going to try to shut down lines. He's obviously trying to make the Sutter his big check-in line. I don't know if it's going to work out. I kind of feel bad for Granlund. Like, I put this clip from the first game of Granlund kind of hovering around the slot. He's banging his stick on the ice. He's ready for the pass. But the guys cycling the puck along the boards are Dorsett and Sutter, and neither of them are going to be able to see him or pass the puck to him anytime soon. So Granlund, I think we both kind of see, could like, you have him at 24 goals leading the team. He's not going to do it playing with those two guys.
Yeah, hang on a second. You feel bad for Granlund. All the pity comes my way, Botch. Like, I made that prediction here on the PatCast a week ago as we sat at Rogers Arena. And for those that missed it, shame on you. You should go back and listen. But I said Granlund would lead the team with 24 goals because I had no idea. I did not see him playing the wing on the fourth line, the checking line, when I made that prediction, because throughout camp in the preseason, he was a centerman. And Green had singled him out at the end of the preseason. Oh, who did you like? Marcus Granlund, you know, was one of the names. And then the reward for that is playing on the left wing with Sutter and Dorsett. So I almost feel like I should get a do-over in my predictions, but I'm a guy of integrity. I won't go there. I will stick somehow, some way, with Marcus Granlund leading this team with 24 goals.
Yeah, and let's face it, you've already hit the low point. Like, it's never going to be worse than predicting Anton Rodin's going to score 17 or Louis Eriksson was going to score 30 and he scores 11. Like, it's never going to get as bad as that. Like, I think Granny won't make you look that bad. But I think, like, that was one of the biggest surprises out of all of training camp. Like, I talked to several players, including the Sedins, and they're like, no, the coach really likes Granlund as the center. Like, I figured that he would be the guy centering that so-called third line where Bromistrov is. And I'd actually be okay if that was Granlund centering that line and it was Granlund who was playing as much as Henrik Sedin. I'm not okay with this world where Alex Bromistrov is playing as much as or more than Henrik Sedin at even strength. Like, are we ready for this? Like, I was all for them getting a cut in minutes, and hey, they're 37, and the Sedin should be marginalized. But man, I'm uncomfortable with them taking a step. I'm uncomfortable with people asking them, you know, hey, how do you feel about Henrik Bromistrov's playing more than you? How do you feel about that? Like, I don't want to see a season of that question. And I feel like that's what's about to happen right now.
Another example, though, flat J-pad on a stick. You go in, and every time you ask that question, you know, it just comes, you wave it around a little, and they'll know that, like, a tough question is coming, but they're going to kind of warm to it because you'll have flat J-pad on a stick. I have to laugh because, look, I wrote that goal prediction column in the summer the year before. It was an August column when nothing was going on, and the way that thing has taken on a life of its own, it was a top 10 list. It was 10 players. But, like, people seem to think I went through the entire organization, like, all the Utica players as well, some of the guys in Kalamazoo, draft picks, you know, players that haven't even been drafted yet. Like, it was a top 10. And yes, I missed the mark mightily on a number of them. It was a summer prediction column. But the number of people that have come back at me and, like, how come you haven't gone player by player? And because that wasn't what it was. It was never player by player. That wasn't the intention of it. That's not, you know. So I gave you the top three last week. I said there'd be three 20-goal scorers, Granlund, Horvat, and Berchi. And I'm gonna stick to that because, look, we're two games in, and Horvat's got two, and then it's like a goal here and a goal. They got five goals in two games. So, I still think it's going to be a struggle for this group to score some goals. Now, I know how much you like playing games here on the PatCast, so I'm going to lead you down this road because the question now becomes, if Besser gets into the lineup, who comes out? And we're not going to ask that question, but I do want to ask you very quickly, as we run through the roster of forwards on the Vancouver Canucks as it stands right now, who isn't a candidate to be scratched at some point this season by Travis Green? Wow. Daniel and Henrik, are they candidates to be scratched at any point? Scratched, not injured, but scratched.
Yeah, there's no way. Do you really think that that's plausible? Like,
I'm just
Hall of Fame players.
I'm just asking the questions here.
Oh yeah, I would be willing to go on a limb here and say that this season will end without anyone considering scratching Henrik or Daniel.
Bo Horvat.
Of course not. No.
Now it gets interesting, though. Yeah. Sven Berchi?
Yeah, I would say that there's a chance. Yep. I would agree with that.
Louis Eriksson?
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I like Louis. I think that, I kind of bought in at some point in the preseason that there's going to be this bounce back, but now I've watched the first two games, and I think 15 goals may be the high watermark, so I'm going to suggest that it is plausible that he's a scratch to get, if Goldobin lights the AHL up, and Virtanen's look great. Like, I don't think Virtanen right now, I would be shocked if Virtanen's pulled for Besser, so I would say, yeah, there's a chance Eriksson gets pulled for a guy like Goldobin or something.
Sutter.
No way. No. He loves him. I think, he's right. He's the cornerstone. I think Horvat and Sutter are the cornerstones of the Travis Green plan up front.
All right, given what we've seen in the first two games, Derek Dorsett.
He's a candidate to be scratched, yeah.
Thomas Vanek.
I would scratch him tomorrow. I think Kuz would scratch him the rest of the year. But, he played, I think it was Virtanen played the fewest minutes last night. I think right behind him was Vanek, and right there was Berchi. So all of those three guys are candidates for sure.
Sam Gagne.
Oh yeah, I got him right on the top of my list right now as guys. I hadn't even Brough and Halfer. I was on with them this morning. They brought him up. I hadn't even thought about Sam Gagne. They said he's been great in the corners and along the boards. That hasn't been my recollection. Maybe I'm not watching him closely enough, but for sure he's a candidate, even with the commitment of the 3-year deal.
I don't think they find the right spot for him yet. I don't know what the right spot is, but a right-handed shot playing left wing, like, I don't like that. I'm not sure I like him at center. I do think, at some point, try him on his natural side, a righty over on the right side. But again, the way the lineup is constructed, there's going to be some guys that are probably out of position just based on the players that they've got right here, right now. So, okay, that basically, the conclusion there is that no to Horvat, no to Sutter, no to the Twins, but everybody else up front is a candidate to come out of the lineup.
Yeah, I think everyone else for sure. And I think that's probably how it should be realistically, especially when the objectives, at some point, you've got to work Goldobin into this lineup. Like, I would love to see a lineup that has Virtanen playing like he's playing right now, has Besser in it, and has Goldobin in it. Like, those three guys are in the lineup, and if you're going to put them in, some vets are going to have to sit out, and if it's going to last for any length of time, you're going to have to rotate the veterans that are in and out. I think that Berchi is the one that I'm kind of torn on, but because he is, like, you do have to give him a long leash. Like, he is a guy that has one of the higher upsides on the team. But also, I would add to your not getting scratch list, I would add Granlund to that. I don't think that there's any chance Green is scratching Granlund. I think he loves that.
How can I forget my leading goal scorer guy? I feel bad now that you're right. I ran through the list. I forgot about old Granny there. But I would put him, you're right. I think he's pretty much untouchable when it comes to being a scratch. I hope that he's not buried on the fourth line throughout the whole season, but we'll see how it goes for him.
But if the Sedins continue, like, let's just put this forward a couple of times. Now they've got points. Great, but they're playing, I think that they're playing, they ended up, I think Henrik had 16 minutes around there last night, And that was because he had a couple shifts in overtime. If they continue to average 14 or 15 minutes and they go through a 2-3-week, 4-week stretch where they're not putting, you know, not getting power play production, they're not putting up points, they're playing less than the so-called third line in Bermistrov, do you think that there's a chance that Travis Green taps one of them and says, you know what? Because they are 37. Like, hold on. They are 37. Is there a chance that Travis Green thinks this way? On a back-to-back, they need a rest. Not as a punitive, you suck, you're going to sit out, but is there a chance he sits them occasionally as a rest?
I think it starts by splitting them if they're not being productive. Again, something we just haven't seen very much over their careers. But I am willing to hear you out on that line of thinking. I'm not sure it's going to happen, but we've seen in basketball in the recent years where, you know, star players have rested and it's not great for the league. I get all that, but, you know, if it's in the best interest of the players and a team, now, you know, I think of it more in terms of resting guys so they're ready for the playoffs. I don't think that that's necessarily going to enter the equation with this group here. But I do think that's plausible somewhere down the line that, you know, you could spot them here and there on the back half of back-to-backs. And again, it's one of the most remarkable things about last year in a season that was in the shitter that Daniel and Henrik played all 82 games. Like, there's some luck in that, and we always hear about their conditioning and their bike rides from the airport to Grouse Mountain. And you know, I mean, these guys are pros through and through. I get that. But you see it. There are freak accidents. There's freak injuries, whatever. The fact that they both played all 82 games, I think that's going to be difficult for them to repeat this year.
It is. It's one of the outrage. Like, there's a few, I think, you can get yourself outraged or worked up looking back over what happened last year. And I don't think that there's any bigger one than Miller playing so predominantly over Markstrom when Miller was about to take off and Markstrom's going to be the guy here for the next 3 years. Like, it looks absurd that that Willie would make those decisions. And they were so bent on Miller being their number one when he had, like, he was gone. The first chance he got, he took off for Anaheim. See you later, boys. I'm out of here. So that was ridiculous. It's also ridiculous to think that the Sedins played 19 minutes a game at 36. Like, what was the point of that? Like, why didn't Willie, well, you know, in the second half of these so-called meaningless games, why didn't he play them 15, 16 minutes and start letting Horvat take over? So again, I think that that's, you know, it's one of the issues you can look back and get worked up about. I feel like they're already, like, they're not tired of the holy shit, like, you guys aren't playing, like, very much at all questions, but they can see it from here. And we were talking to Henrik last night, and at the end, Ed started asking about, you know, were you ready for this? Were you ready to be playing so little at even strength? I didn't ask him if he was ready for Bremenstorff to be playing the same as him, and I think they're almost identical. I think in regulation, Henrik played 15-13 overall, and Bremenstorff was at 14-57, so they were right there. And Henrik, you know, he said, look, it's great for you guys, meaning that I know that there's going to be a shit ton of stories on this, and this is going to be a topic that's going to generate story after story after story all season. But, you know, we've kind of basically said we've accepted our place on this team, which is great to say now. It's okay to say now, at least. But they've actually been, they may have been their best line last night. You know, like, why didn't they play more? Why didn't he play them more down the stretch? Why, with 4 minutes left in the game, Travis has a TV timeout and he rides Bermistrov. He puts them out there for a face-off. I don't know. I thought there was some curious call. And I'm willing to, like, give Travis a lot of time. Like, I got a lot of time for him. And I'm willing to you know, let him breathe and figure this thing out the NHL. But in my head, I'm making note, like, there's certainly some odd things that are happening that maybe later on are a bigger story.
I got a kick both nights so far this season. The post-game, you know, the question to the coach about, what can you say about Jacob Markstrom and his resolve and his battle back and his intestinal fortitude? And Travis Green, you can see he's doing the slow burn. He's like, yeah, that's great, but, like, am I going to have to answer this every night because he's given up a crappy goal right off the hop?
Oh, last night was, like absurd. There is no way that a goal like that goes in, and it doesn't really matter how well he plays. I mean, it does matter how well he plays the rest of the game, but that puck cannot go in the net, and that can't continue. He can't continue to let soft goals in And it, you can paint the positive angle is that he's resilient, he's good, and he did play that way. And I love the way he plays the puck. Like, I'm really excited to see a goalie who can actually get out of his net and have the confidence to move the puck. But, man, that goal, first goal last night, that right there, that's as ugly as it gets. Like, there's no putting lipstick on a pig. Like, you can't say, you know, the resilience without saying that was a really shitty goal, Markstrom.
Right, and 47 games into the season, like, are we going to ask that question 42 times? Like, Travis, what about your goal? He bounced back again. And Travis's like, yeah, but he keeps letting these terrible goals put us down. And, you know, credit to them. They've battled back and had a lead in both games after, you know, opening night, first shot. Like, that could have sunk the Vancouver Canucks against an Oilers team. So I do give them credit for getting down to business and ultimately getting a win there. Curious, just as we kind of come to the end here, what do you make of the coach two games in calling his team soft? Soft is one of those words in the hockey world that has some connotations, and I'm going to follow up with him today because I'm kind of curious. You know, it's like you don't call your team quitters, and he didn't. That's my word, not his. But anytime, you know, the word quit comes up in the sports lexicon, like, that's one of those words that kind of jumps out at you. But to hear a coach say they were soft, like, you know, were they not willing to respond? Did they not initiate? Were they not hard enough on pucks? Like, I'm kind of curious to get to the bottom of what he meant, because just for him to loft the word soft out there, to me, that opens the door to all sorts of sort of images and ideas.
Well, yeah, and then now the other thing is that yeah, you can ask the coach to expand on it, but the players are probably, I don't know if you're asking Dorsett. If you are, let me know, because I want to see that. I need flat J-pad on a stick to go into the Dorsett scrum and tell him that the coach just said the team was soft.
I'd be afraid to go ask Stetcher.
And Hutton, he all.
No, but Stetcher punched me out now.
That's right. We definitely need flat J-pad for that. It is, again, it's part of the New World Order here, is that he is going to call players out. He's going to call his team out. Like, that is something, I mean, Willie, even on his last day, his lowest moment, he would never suggest that his team played soft or didn't give it the compete. And he did win over the kind of narrative in town, because the collect Canucks team, for some reason, when people talk about it, they say they always gave their all and they always competed. No, they didn't. They absolutely gave up in the last half of the season, the last 2 months, when they were giving up four in those string of games, when they're giving up 40 shots a night on poor Ryan Miller. Like, that team totally checked out and gave up, and they were not playing for Willie at all. But the narrative was always his teams compete. Because that's what Willie always said. Travis is not going to be that guy. If his team doesn't show up, he's going to say it. And I thought it was funny. Like, we heard someone in the media as we were going down last night to do the interviews and to do the post game. Someone in the Canucks played great for the second game in a row. And we looked at each other in disbelief. And you said to me at the time, you predicted, you said, there is no way that Travis Green is going to say that his team played great. And you are absolutely 100% right. He essentially ripped them. He said that they didn't, kind of basically said they didn't meet the Travis Green standards. They didn't look like a Travis Green team. And he's okay with mistakes. He said he's okay with bad passing and mistakes, but he's not okay with them being soft. And they were soft last night. I thought it was refreshing. I think the fans will think it's refreshing to hear that. I'm not sure how the players are going to respond to that, though.
All right, and finally, because I feel strongly, like, for the integrity of the podcast and really for this market, Botch, it's fallen to you and me, because nobody, and I mean nobody, with capital letters, bold, underlined, nobody talks about Louis Erickson. So we're going to finish up with a talk about Louis Erickson, because somebody has to. Talk about Louis Erickson. The guy's making $6 million again. You touched on him briefly, but it's not even so much the on ice, it's the idea of Louis Erickson. And again, like, two games into this season, I see him at practice, I see him on the ice during games. That's the only time I ever see Louis Erickson. Like, he doesn't exist off the ice. He is nowhere to be seen. He is nowhere to be found. Some might say that applies on the ice a little too much as well. But the off-ice Louis Erickson is almost like a ghost.
I've said it before on the podcast that I don't think that there's another Canadian city that has talked less about a $6 million player in the history of the hockey than this town has talked less about Erickson. But I actually started thinking, like, maybe in all of sports, there has never been a $6 million player is barely on the NBA bench. I think those guys are talked about more in their towns than Erickson is talked in this one. And I honestly ask you, like, this seriously, from the beginning of training camp, when it started, to now, we're a month and change into this, has Travis Green even been asked one time? Has he faced one Erickson question? That I don't think he has. I can't remember one person asking about Louis the whole time.
I mean, I back you on that one, because I can't. I think he singled him out after the final preseason game. Remember the hand eye, he dropped the puck down, he scored, and Travis was asked, who did you like tonight? But it was almost like he had to consult his roster. Number 21. Oh, yeah, Erickson. That guy, even the coach doesn't remember he plays for the team. So, anyways.
But I do think that Erickson, I'm starting to sense that Erickson, there's a chance he can become a bigger topic here, because there's a big anti-Vanek push coming. Like, I feel it ballooning in the city. And, you know, it's one thing to say, like, you know, Vanek hasn't been doing much with the Sedins. I don't notice the Sedins. The next step is who should be playing with the Sedins, right? And if Granlund is on the checking line and Sam Gagner is doing nothing with Burmistrov, the only guy left really that you can pick out and say he's got to be him is Erickson. So I'm starting to see in a not too distant future, this Erickson's got to play ahead of Vanek with the Sedins at even strength. So maybe I should write a big Sunday feature on this, actually, to get ahead of this firestorm.
Just in closing, I'm thinking to myself, this ought to be a chapter in the book, 100 things for Canucks fans to do before they die. One chapter should be talk about Louis Erickson. It can be a short chapter,
yeah,
but it should be a chapter in the book, talk about Louis Erickson. We got to talk about Eagle Ridge GM. They're our sponsors, and we thank them for that and their support of the podcast. And we always say at the end of the program, you know, if you're in the market for a new vehicle, they support us. We ask you to support them. So start your car buying search online, EagleRidgeGM.com, and then take it from there. You can find the showroom, 2595 Barnett Highway out in Coquitlam. From UBC for Botch, this is J-Pat on a stick. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast here on Province Radio.